I think you're really going to enjoy this kitchen.
This is our latest development. We call this Phase 4.
Where do you live, Mr. Freeling?
Well, you know, actually, we were the first family to set up housekeeping in the Cuesta Verde Estates.
Phase 1?
Yeah, we had to pass through my neighborhood to get to here this morning.
Oh, that area with the lived-in look.
Yeah, it has that, but I think in a couple of months, you're not going to be able to distinguish Phase 1 from Phase 3 to Phase... You know, we have a saying around here. The grass grows greener on every side.
You're jamming the frequencies.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
The ghosts have already started messing with stuff.
Everybody, welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 487, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian, his neighbor is on the same remote, Dunaway.
Yeah, stop. I want to watch Mr. Rogers. No. Oh, hi. Grab your bags and sort your goodies while we spin you a tale from the sack. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Freeling, we have some good news and some bad news. The good news is we believe your daughter is still alive somewhere in the walls of your home. The bad news is she's being held there by a poltergeist. What's that, Marty? I thought you said it was a poltergeist. Well, what did you say? A poltergeist? The hell is a poltergeist, Marty? It's like a poltergeist, but instead of disembodied human spirits, it's a collection of goose spirits that cannot find peace to move on into the light. A poltergeist. Gee, Marty. You're fired. Unless, Mr. Freeling, didn't you say this spot where your home is built used to be the city park? But they moved the park 5 miles up the road, right? Mr. Freeling, right? Oh, you son of a bitch! You moved the park, but you left the geese, didn't you? You son of a bitch, you left the geese, and you only moved the park benches and slides. Carol Ann, if you can hear me, grab some bread from the cupboard and lure the poltergeist to the light. The light is good, Carol Ann. Light is good. And now for something really evil. Randy?
That's two in a row there. Did that last week. All right, we're all done. Also with us, Randy, he likes to lean into your window and eat your shit, Jordan.
Oh. Aloha, Scott. Brian. Happy Halloween, my friends.
Thank you.
And thanks for meeting with me here in this empty lot surrounded by houses. I got the final invoice here for our crew spending 2 days and one night in your fun house. There's just a few things here that we're going to need you to pay for that we didn't previously discuss. Let's see. This first one here, we're going to need to apply this surcharge for your child storing a Clue board game at an angle leaning up against a wall. That may be the scariest thing we saw. Number two here. Oh, this is a charge for our chargers. We kept putting our phones down on our chargers and they kept sliding off. You're the worst induction charger in a haunted house. Number three. Oh, I know you've lost everything, but man, you're going to pay this fee for making us listen to the Star Spangled Banner multiple times. What is wrong with you, man? All right. Climb on my back and I'll carry you out of here. I'm the wind, you're the feather.
Wow. Sorry, I was halfway drinking a very hot drink.
I'm piecing that all together.
Yeah,
right,
I'm just making sense of it in my mind. With us also, and finally, Brian, he will whisper through a large part of this movie, Ibbit.
Okay, I will, but I won't do it right now.
Okay. Oh, hey, Mr. Davidson. Yeah, I wanted to talk with you really quickly. I know I've only been working for you for a couple months here, and this is my first job as a poltergeist, and I'm just kind of learning the ropes. But I've got this family that I've been assigned, and I've been having no luck getting them to leave the house. What have I tried so far? Well, I started with the bent silverware, right, and the flying Wallenda chair balancing routine. Yeah, I got all the chairs balanced on the kitchen table in 7 seconds and didn't even make a sound. Yeah, I know. I would have thought so, too. No, she clapped her hands, pulled out her smartphone, and took a selfie with it. Yeah, well, It's got 428 likes on Instagram, so that's a thing. But she didn't even notice that I pretty much doubled the number of chairs that they have in their kitchen. But no, still, they didn't budge. Yeah, then I set up the slidey floor spot, you know, like the corner square in the board game. Sorry. Yeah, right? No, she loved it. She put chairs on it. She put her kid on it. She was in the process of trying to get the neighbors over to slide around on it when I did some weird editing thing with the film and I had to start pelting them with mosquitoes. Any other ideas? Oh. Turn the door into an anus. I like that. Good, good. Hulk on horseback. Okay, weird, but interesting. Awesome. I'll try all those things. Thanks. Say, you want to go get some Pizza Hut later? Nice.
Hey, that's
that reminds me of like maybe you went took Poltergeist and Beetlejuice and put it together.
Mm-hmm.
Poltergeist. Beetlegeist.
Beetlegeist. I mean, that's an actual thing.
This is kind of a thing.
Isn't Beetlegeist?
I would like to start our unpacking of Poltergeist by aping on Scott's soundtrack grade. Mm. I'm going to give this whole movie an SAS for Spielberg as shit.
Oh, yeah. That's funny you said that. I'm going to go ahead and jump straight to a clip that that's hilarious because I named this clip Spielberg as shit music, and I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yeah, it's just a musical selection. It's right at the top of the movie. I'll just get out of the way now. Check it out. I mean, this is, if that's not Spielberg music, I don't know what is.
I mean, he's a dumb working.
It's not even John Williams. That like no John Williams in this thing at all for being a Spielberg deal.
No.
Let there be no doubt. This and Close Encounters and E.T. all exist in the same universe, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Well, he was simul-filming E.T. when this was being made, and so it doesn't surprise me that you don't have John Williams on it just because he's busy doing that over there. But
Toby Hooper. Texas Chainsaw Massacre was the director, but heavily influenced and partially directed by Spielberg due to a contract negotiation.
There's only one moment in this entire movie that feels like Toby Hooper had anything to do with it. It's when the guy's peeling his face off, and that's it.
I've read a bunch of stuff about this, and it's always been a point of contention whether how much Toby Hooper directed and how much Steven Spielberg had influence over this. But this was supposed to be the third kind is supposed to be kind of like a sequel to that. So it's supposed to be originally some of the ideas were supposed to exist in the same universe. Sure. But Toby Hooper argued that away.
I could see that. Yeah. But he was so involved. There's even like trivia like this. Let's see, where is it? Zelda Rubinstein. No, that's not her. Oh, here it is. Jo Beth Williams was hesitant about shooting the swimming pool scene because of the large amount of electrical equipment positioned over and around the very wet, muddy pool. In order to comfort her, Steven Spielberg himself, he crawled into the pool with her to shoot the scene. He said to her, "Now, if the light falls in, we both fry." The strategy worked, and Williams got in the pool. Now, I don't know if that should have any scrutiny or not. Maybe. In fact, I'll play it just to be safe.
Scrutiny.
But that sounds like he was hovering and was there every day and was involved in shoots. And
there's, there's so much stuff like that in the trivia about him doing stuff with the actress who played Carol Ann and helping her and making her feel better about the scary stuff that she was involved in. And so it just feels like he was there every day.
And I want to argue with something that came out in passing 2 minutes ago, which is that's not John Williams. It is our massive Star Trek connection, Jerry Goldsmith, who is poor man's John Williams.
Oh, that's great. Like,
there is no doubt that Jerry Goldsmith, was like in the shadow of John Williams for his entire career. Mm-hmm. And also like starting with Star Trek V, he is the Star Trek composer, right?
Yeah.
Like all through all these series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it just like, I felt very, very much like this was somehow there's an effect that a filmmaker like Spielberg apparently has on a composer.
Yeah.
You know, like it just felt like that.
Here's the thing. And I know we've talked about Spielberg a ton, both up and down, good and bad, blah, 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 over the years, over the 11 years we've been doing the show. But this movie succeeds on it being very Spielbergian. Like it's what makes it work for me and worked for me when I was younger. Now there are things about it that scared the crap out of me in 1982. I was very young. I was, I don't know, 11, 12, whatever I was. And it scared the bejesus out of me, especially in a couple of cases. But there was also a overall feeling of this, it's going to be okay. we're going to get through this. This family mm-hmm. sticks together. We're going to find a way. Like, those sensibilities are very Spielberg yeah. family-friendly sensibilities. And when applied to a haunted movie, horror movie that everyone tried to make R, by the way, they had to fight for the PG because there was no PG-13 yet. Yeah. Right. That really worked for me. Like, that made the movie more palatable at the time. But also, even today, I appreciate it more because I feel like this isn't just some movie. It reminds me of Haunting of Hill House, which is a scary, creepy thing. But that series on Netflix isn't about the scary and the creepy and then people dying as a result. It's about mm-hmm. you rooting for a family that you really want to see make it through this. And that's right. how and this movie works.
Amityville Horror is always
and this one. And I have crapped on Steven Spielberg quite a bit in Film Sack, and I'm not going to do that today because this movie finds something between Craig T. Nelson and Joe Beth Williams, who are just a married couple smoking a doob after the kids have gone to bed. You know,
yeah, it's interesting.
A little Donald Duck foreplay. Yeah,
yeah, it's interesting because Craig T. Nelson it has found a way to clean up his act somewhat. So he's reading about Reagan. And, you know, the war on drugs and that kind of stuff. And Joe Beth Williams is the background rolling a doobie. So, I mean, he's in this weird suburban position of, you know, things transforming from the 70s to the 80s. And it's just horror in the suburbs.
Well, they would have been teens of the 60s. So they're definitely sort of the baby boomer, hippie, you know, free love generation. And then, yeah, you're right. There's these subtle straddlings of our old time and our current time. We're raising this family. We're trying to live in suburbia. I literally sell phase four versions of this house we live in. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all of those tropes and trappings. But at the same time, he's over there making massive weed rolls. Like, he's over there making three or four of these.
He's standing in front of the mirror doing his tummy out and in and out. Yeah.
Before, after.
And you're just like Gibbons said, is Donald Duck crap and all
playfulness.
That. Yeah. 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 And that really, they sold me on that couple early. Randy's right. Like, there's a great relationship. I kind of had a childhood crush on Joe Beth Williams, and rightly so.
Well, how could you not?
Yeah, she was hot.
She was great.
Yeah, but everything about all of that setup is great. It feels real. None of this feels contrived. The kid actors are putting in real cool performances, like legit. That's where Spielberg shines. Yeah. I don't know what special power he has, but these same actors are not great in other things. So that's how you know it's got to be that.
I mean, I agree with you, except with the super trope of the blank faced little girl like that. Oh my gosh, that just drove me crazy after a while.
Heather O'Rourke,
she works. Yeah, for me.
Such a trope. The child that knows what's going on and is completely stoic about it. Oh my god.
Yeah, that's worth playing a trope thing for.
But was it not? I mean, was it not the most effective part of the marketing of the film? I mean, that's the thing they always shown in the marketing.
The line you remember, right? They're turning around. And all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that
she's a blank slate. She was born in that home. They said she was actually literally born in the home.
I missed that part. Who said that?
I don't remember that from previous viewings. This is the first time I've watched it, you know, as a film sacker. So I pay a little more attention to things.
Yeah, they said it near the first end when they're packing up boxes and moving. Like, man, you know, it's going to be tough to leave here because Carol Ann was born in this house.
Born in this house.
Anybody else got a history with this film?
Oh, big time.
I watched it.
I have a huge history with it. When we were younger, we had the VHS tape that I don't even think we had legally. I'm pretty sure we'd copied it from a friend. So it was pretty hammered already.
Wow.
But we watched it over and over and over, kind of wore it out. And I had this rule where when the steak maggot scene / guy peeling his face off came up, I would skip it every time. I couldn't do it. It really got under my skin.
Yeah, the tearing of the face scene. So is that also a real thing that happens in movies? You see it all the time. It's like, I don't know about you guys, but the first time I pull a tooth out of my face, I'm like, okay, stop. All right, I'm going to the dentist now. Something's wrong. I'm not going to peel my face off. If I start peeling off, like, oh no, why is my flesh coming off here? I'm going to push that back in. I'm going to put a Band-Aid on it. I'm going to go to emergency room.
But that's the whole point, is that it was all just a mirage at the end. He had off.
And just kept on peeling it. Like,
kind of a trope in its own way. But that's the other thing is haunted house movies. I've said this before. They bug me generally because they never follow their own rules, or they don't establish rules that I can count on. So I never know what the hell's going on. One minute they're physical, the next minute they're metaphysical. They can't touch anybody, but can they? Right. And if, you know, blah, blah, blah. So
what are their rules?
This yeah. one doesn't get so bogged down in it. So I don't even really think about it. Like I just, right. I'm just like, I'm going beat to beat. I want to see what happens. I want to see if they're going to be okay. It's there creepy, was
the,
but
the hopeful. Biggest reveal. I wasn't shocked by, a movie ending as much as I was by this movie until the Sixth Sense came along. I mean, because buried, it was on a graveyard. You didn't move the graves. Mm-hmm. It was like, that was a big reveal.
That was the reveal ending, not the second, not the return of the poltergeist in the second half.
No. Okay. So I want to answer my own question. What's your history with this movie? Yeah. I have seen this movie one time. I was a teenager. It was at a like haunted house viewing. I was required to sit and watch this movie, and my memories of it are so basic. Like the TV transmits a ghost to a little girl, like that was my all I remembered of the movie. Right. So I was so thrilled that we got to a couple of super tropes in this film, and the graveyard that I did not remember at all was the ultimate trope. Oh my gosh. Mm. They just needed to say something about Indians, and we're
it was
there.
Also very Spielberg-y, but he loves dead bodies floating out of stuff, yeah. or like Indiana Jones finding a bunch of bodies yeah. hanging in a crypt. Mm-hmm. Like he
and they always
that.
Turn towards the protagonist. It's the body comes up.
It's so Spielberg to do that.
They retconned that Indian graveyard crap in part two, though, because that wasn't in the first one. There was no Indian grave burial ground. It was just a burial ground. It's a burial ground. Yeah. Yep. Everybody was popping up. There was nobody popping up out of there that was. Native American. Ladies, it was all a bunch of white people.
Yeah, they were all with pearls on and white hair, and right. This was dumb. Like, you're right, and I kind of liked it that way better because
old timey. Look at that.
It was less tropey to just say, "Well, it's just the dead." It's not
right.
any kind mm-hmm. of like, "Oh, you've ruined our sacred ground." That's when I don't know. That just gets into places.
Does it make it scarier if it's like, "Oh, they're like working together. They're a group. They were a group before right. death, and they banded together after death."
Ooh. They really hate white people. Ooh. You know, it's like no dead people.
Yeah, but they those bodies popping out of the water and the not finished pool and stuff is just real. Still very very. Yeah. Effective.
I had forgotten completely, and I've seen this movie many times, and I don't know if I just kind of always zoned out during the part, but when the boy is getting et by the tree, I'm like, I don't remember him getting et by the tree. I must have not been paying attention at all, but that was scary to me.
Yeah, that the tree was scary. The clown was scary.
Yeah, that ent eaten. That was not right.
Ent eaten.
Yeah. Who didn't like it?
I touched on this last week and when we first announced we were doing Poltergeist a little bit at the beginning of the show, but it's the scene where Robbie is looking for the stupid marionette doll, the clown doll.
Yeah, that's what everybody remembers.
Why the hell would you keep that thing?
Right.
And he looks under the bed and comes up. And it's the easiest trope. You know to expect it. It's like when somebody opens a medicine cabinet. You know, there won't be anything in the medicine cabinet, but when it comes back, the mirror will have the face of the person that's staring right. him. And that freaked me out so much, him coming back up and then the marionette grabbing around his face. Yeah. I was, 11 or 12 years old at the time, seeing at the Westminster Six, the Westminster Mall nice. Six multiplex. I had to get up and go pee, and I remember standing at the urinal shaking because I was so scared.
I love that.
Not going back. Nope.
But isn't that funny that there's a weird wholesomeness to the horror movie? Like, that doesn't happen very often. And that's what made it unique at the time, certainly in a batch of late 70s, early 80s horror movies, where it was all, you hated everybody. And the minute they got killed, you're like, well, of course you got killed because you suck. Like, everyone sucks.
Right.
Even the person that survived, you're like, well, okay, I'm glad they survived, but they kind of also suck. This movie is about people I gave a shit about, and I didn't want anyone to get hurt. And part of that is earnest performances across the board. Like, even today, I see Craig T. Nelson outside. I see Coach out there yelling at that dude going, "You didn't move the bodies!" I could see myself doing that in his shoes. And on the kid's side, I could see myself being that scared buck-toothed kid about the tree or about Carol Ann went or why he's hearing voices. It's so well made, you know?
The only person they could really kill off, and nobody dies in this film, which is amazing for a horror film like this.
Yeah,
right. Marty quits. But he doesn't really die, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only person who really could die or could have been killed is the landowner dude who didn't move the bodies, just move the headstones. Mr. Like that would have been the karma coming back kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was just standing there. James Karen,
is that who that is, Mr. Teague? And who that was?
Well, when the house folded in on itself, he was in the vicinity, so one might wonder if he got snapped up into that, but.
Right. Well, you see him get knocked when the house folds in upon itself, and then that force flies out. You see him
laying on the sidewalk like,
he's getting back up and he's like going, oh, what have I done? What have I done, Mr. Teague?
Oh, and by the way, another Spielberg thing I noticed, and there's no way this is a coincidence. The special effects they used in Indiana Jones, which was what, a year prior, the first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark. That movie had this scene when the ghosts first come out of the ark and start flying through the Nazis and all that. But before they turn bad, they're all beautiful and everything. Yeah. But even when they turn bad, they had this like underwater quality, which literally they were effects created underwater to create the flowing hair and the garment and whatever. They do the same thing here. They had that weird dog horse creature that's screaming at Mary Beth Joe Williams. Junior.
That room just makes me laugh. That sometimes they treat that room like it's a joke in a movie.
Right. It's a sideshow. Like, you want to see something? Look at this.
Yep.
Well, look at our MCU connection there anymore.
Yeah.
Uh-uh. They definitely get to the edge of how people would actually react to things. Like, for example, if you brought some ghost hunters into your house and they had a camera and like there are a crew of people who have been doing that and you had actual ghosts, right? And it would be the first time they have ever really actually experienced actual ghosts doing these things. They would leave. They would not hang around and refuse to get other people involved, call the police, all that stuff. They would leave. They would go right to the local news station. You would be covered in people within an hour.
Yeah. They said they couldn't show it on 60 Minutes. Craig T. Nelson told them.
Well,
I'm just saying that, like, this movie really presses you to go along with people just sort of, you know, that they would be mostly shocked.
Yeah.
Right. And it's kind of, it kind of plays into a conceit of what was going on during the 80s, is where we were trying to hide our dirty laundry. And so it kind of played into some of the commentary from that time.
Mm-hmm.
At least it played that way for me.
A little bit. Yeah. There's some of that stuff. There's like this, desire to be all suburban and, you know, you've got the perfect little family.
Nobody panic.
Okay. Very, very 80s in that way. At least that's my memory of how that stuff was. So there's definitely some commentary there. But the idea that you will all survive this just by sure will and get out of there, and then chucking the TV out in the motel room is one of my favorite things in the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just a great moment for a movie to end on. Yeah. It's just great. Like I was worried with this viewing that I was going to go, all right, some of this is not great. And yes, it has the look of a thing that came out in 1982. There's no getting around that, but it's pretty good.
It holds up really well.
Yeah. And even the effects, I was talking about the underwater thing, but even that giant head that comes bursting through the door, something scary as all shit.
Yeah. Like
just a dangly skin pieces falling off of it. And
it's heavy the way it moved. It didn't feel like a puppet. It had some motion to it, and I don't know. And flashing, like, by the way, okay, so if you're of our age, you may remember this, but when we were kids, TV stations would sign off at around 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And
if you lived in a more conservative part of the country, they signed off right at midnight.
Yeah, it could be midnight too. We had ours went till about 2, and it was this same thing, like that. They play the thing of allegiance, Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah, they would throw a flag up there and it would play, and then when it went off, it would
bunch of patriotic imagery for some reason.
This ends our broadcast day.
And it's so unthinkable now. Like, this isn't even a concept now. It's like the weirdest idea, because everything runs for 24 hours. Everything has content going all the time. In the streaming world, it's all on demand all the time. There's no off time for any of this stuff.
But then
what I didn't remember, and this movie really brought back to me, was it would literally shut down so that now the air waves are just static and white and flashy. And if you did fall asleep next to your TV, the room became a strobe light nightmare.
Yeah, and it did.
That really like brought it back.
Depicts.
Yeah, no, not quite that bad, but that really that brought it
stark.
Back.
Yeah,
like that moment when she's crawling toward the bottom of the bed to talk to the TV again. Right. I just went, oh yeah, okay. We're
yeah, it's 82.
No, yeah. I loved it. I'm no yeah. complaints here. Like it's sure it's exaggerated, but for whatever
Spielberg
reason that really
play
got
White
me.
Is a character like nobody else, and that's where I felt like Spielberg was the most.
And what does the light symbolize?
I don't know. It symbolizes the character. I mean, it's such a. It's an odd play.
Let's talk about
Rain. I'm going to take that. I'm going to take that honestly. It actually symbolizes the truth, like reality.
Mm.
Light is what you shine on things to know what's going on, right? Mm,
sure.
And so, like, there's a really deep symbolism here where the movie almost never portrays just darkness, like almost yeah. ever. There's a little bit of use of it, but a lot of it is using darkness to set up using some kind of light.
Did you guys know that the Poltergeist is German for loud ghost?
Did I knew you know Geist was ghost. I did yeah. not know that yeah. Polter
yeah.
is loud.
Yeah, or it, noisy, yeah. I guess more accurate.
Noisy
yeah.
ghost.
So yeah. if they were redoing this today, would the, and I know they did come out with a remake, but you can't, you know, obviously the TV stations don't turn off after a certain time. Would the ghost come out from like a 3 a.m. infomercial for Seattle?
Yeah, be yes, like exactly. Share somebody.
Slap chop Poltergeist. Yeah.
Hold on. The one that came out that I'm thinking of is the 2015 one with Sam Rockwell. How yeah, was that? Right, did anyone yeah. see that? Was it?
Did not
I did
it.
Not. And I was disappointed that I didn't see it and I never did get back to it. And
nope. I watched the trailer before the show today just to see. And it's, and there are scenes that look like they are just straight shot for shot remakes of what we saw.
I mean, they could easily just say, you know, just do the time setting. New actors say, oh, the early 80s.
Oh, and keep it, yeah. keep it 80s. Sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah. the fact that it's static isn't really a requirement. You could have the ghosts right. enter through whatever television means, and they keep it television because they still have the new Carol Ann touching the screen saying kind they're
of,
here.
But, kind of desirous right. to see this because I don't care. The sequel was bad. We saw it here. I did not like it.
Yeah,
I mean, I liked it for us, but I didn't like mm-hmm. it as a sequel. And it really does not hold a candle to the original, not even close. And I couldn't even speak to 3 because I've never seen it. But this, I like when, like we did with Evil Dead, I went and watched that 2013 reboot of Evil Dead and I really liked it. So mm-hmm, I'm kind of mm-hmm. tempted here. Maybe.
I'm kind of tempted mm-hmm. as well because I didn't see the reboot. I'm maybe.
And I like Sam Rockwell a lot. So
me too.
He makes everything yeah. better. And
oh.
who's Saxton Shabrino? Who's that? Well, it doesn't matter. Anyway, the point is.
It doesn't matter.
It is funny, though. You look back at how many film sack movies we've watched here that have been rebooted and turned into like new series. Carrie is another one. Horror series.
Yeah. I saw that and liked it. Like I've kind of liked when they do these again.
I can't let go of this first thing I wrote. Like I want to hold back here. The okay. very first note I made was, "Oh my God, the Star Spangled Banner! This is not scary at all." And then when it came on the second time, I'm just like, "Stop trying to make the Star Spangled Banner scary. It won't be." And it's like it just bugs me. I don't know why.
Well,
but
it's
that
meant
song,
to be discordant, though, right? You're supposed to see it, and plus, it's all up close. So you're seeing weird,
especially zoomed in, seeing the pixels.
Then that yeah. would, if they had wrenched the song around. Then I would have been saying, no, 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 it's a TV at the end of the day. It should be playing a normal sounding Star Spangled Banner.
Sure.
I'm just like, the normal sounding Star Spangled Banner just felt like it didn't belong in this movie. I
have it sound a little warped. I like that idea of having it sound a little bit warped, like it's on a, you know, a faulty record player or something to kind of yeah. underscore the scares. Yeah.
Yeah,
anyway, I think the natural sequel to this movie is Close Encounters of the Third Kind because I must have made a dozen notes comparing it to that movie yeah. for some reason. Like I felt like the, you know, there were just all these little like you know, like the main character is a man who has a family who is trying to figure out what the hell's going on and it doesn't fit into his reality. And it just that was so directly the same, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things that works really well here, I think, is that Spielberg rarely wrote his own material or stuff that he produced and or directed. And this is a case where he both produced and then sort of directed. But this is his story. Like he wrote this from the ground up. And right. It kind of made me wish he would have done more of that, because that's rare mm-hmm. for him. He's usually riffing on somebody else's material, or took, you know, Indiana Jones is a George Lucas thing, but he'll work it off a book or a historical account or whatever. And I feel like we maybe missed out on some of the creative juice that is his storytelling. Cause right. while simple, you know, the structure of this is pretty simple. There's something about it that's just really cohesive, feels good, paced well.
Right.
I think the decision to make the mom slightly manic was the right choice. And mm-hmm. it's hard to explain this, but she could have just been disbelieving. And mm-hmm. instead, he knows the smart thing here to do is say, all right, well, the chairs have rearranged themselves. This is weird and psycho, and we should question everything about reality now. Right. The normal tropey thing is to make her like the lady last week, the stepmom, and make her not believe anything until the knife crosses her neck. You know what right. I mean? And in this case, she's like, I'm going to embrace this, and I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to make this chair move, and I'm going to giggle like an idiot when it happens, because I don't know what else to do, because this is too crazy. That's the right choice, and I don't. That feels daring, weirdly, to me, to make that choice and have it work.
And,
I don't
know. There's once again, watching this for FilmSack, I did pick up on the fact that Joe Beth Williams' character did have, and we explored this in part two, I believe, she did have a connection to the afterlife. She had some things that she was kind of in tune with, implying that that's the reason why Carol Ann was able to cross over so easily with what was going on. So I think her character was really well written.
Yeah, mm-hmm. she's a real strong point of this. Plus, she just got all those mother, mama bear vibes. She just wants, it's regardless of what happens, no matter how bad this gets, I'm going to save my children.
Right. No matter how bad this gets, I'm still going to put my stupid kids back in the same stupid room that all this crap happened.
Yeah,
I was like, are you kidding me? That was the most unbelievable part for me. It's like, there's no way I could put my kids back down to bed. In the same room.
In the same room, yeah. Like
all of that. Well, but then, no way.
And I know some comedian already did this, but basically, as soon as I look over, and all the chairs are stacked on top of each other on the table, that's when I'm calling the real estate, the realtor, and say, "Yep, sorry, where are we moving to?
Where's your husband?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He is the real estate agent. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's true.
Call your husband and say we new house, honey.
Out of Cuesta Quanta, whatever it's called.
Yeah, Green Hillside or whatever it is. Cuesta.
Didn't you appreciate that concept?
Did anyone else?
Oh, go ahead.
Talk about weeds to themselves.
It was such a weedsy.
Little boxes on the hillside.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were definitely aiming for that whole, suburban lifestyle.
It was filmed in Agoura Hills, where they scouted and found some brand new neighborhoods that looked mm-hmm. how they wanted to look mm-hmm. and made a statement. Like when you see that neighborhood, that is a statement. Yep. And I found that really, really nice. Because it colors the rest of the movie. You don't just have, he's a realtor in a neighborhood that he lives in, but it's a new.
Trivia says that it's still there, that house, by the way. The last family who owned it sold it in May of 2009.
That's not true. I saw it get sucked up into the
other world. You only know what you believe, so it's fine. You believe what you want to believe.
No, I have cousins in Simi Valley, and next time I go out there to visit them, I am so making them take me to this house.
Yeah.
We're going to gotta check this thing.
Yeah.
I think the shots of weeds are Santa Clarita. Which was probably had some new neighborhoods in 2004, mm-hmm. but this was Agoura Hills, and I love that style. Like, and it just gets better every time. Like every time you go to that part of Southern California, it's just like I like it even more. It looks so 70s.
It's like Edward Scissorhands did a good job of sending that up. Good. You know,
with that one though, at least you got like weird pastel colors on every house.
Yeah, that's true. Everything looked like a Benetton. Not Benetton. What was the? There was a store in the mall in the 80s that everything was colored like that, and I hated it. Like Easter egg colors. I guess those are back, by the way. Apparently, this is the year for a return to those particular colors.
I was told by my 13-year-old that they wish they grew up during the 80s, and I said, "Oh, child."
Dude, my kids say that all the time. They all believe
what you see on the TV.
Yeah. They're all convinced. They're convinced that my decade was the decade. And I'm not so sure they're wrong. I love the 80s.
Yeah, it's hard for me to dispute that.
Yeah. When I was growing up, you know, we thought the 50s was the decade. I mean, it was, you know, during the 80s, we were totally like, I would just love to live during the 50s.
No, those are old people. Are you kidding? I had zero interest in the 50s.
You didn't watch Happy Days and think,
I watched Happy Days, but I never went, oh, that's the decade I wish I lived in. Not once.
I hung out with the Fonz.
I mean, you could have, and that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the actual decade and all of its culture.
Of course, now when I look back and know what the 50s really were, of course not now.
Yeah, but I like where I was living when I was having it.
13.
The 80s were great, dude. There's no denying it. It was great.
Yeah.
Your kids are right.
The 80s may have been great for you.
Who was it bad for? Who was it bad for? Tell me who it was bad for.
It was bad for lots of people.
every time is bad for somebody. So I don't think there's any way of saying blanket. You can't blanket statement say this one particular decade, everybody had a great time. But culturally speaking.
I am saying that we remember the 80s as a time of greatness and positivity for the most part. And that it would be a great time to live in. And during the 80s, we looked at the 50s in the same way. But now we all look back at the 50s and go, no. And those of us lived during the 80s go, well, you know, there was some great parts, but there was also some really hard times and a lot of really big issues going on that were being.
Yeah, but I didn't pay attention to that. You're not supposed to when you're a kid. You're supposed to just.
Well, of course not. That's what I'm saying now. Now, if you said you want to live in the 50s, no. Want to live in the 80s? Maybe I like to visit, but no.
I would totally live in the 80s again.
I will get in my DeLorean and go visit for a minute. Sure.
Ibbot, let's get in our 80s car. Yeah. We're going back.
I'm totally, totally in. Yeah. Right. 88 miles an hour. We're going back.
Yeah.
We've got to go back.
We've got to go back. It's your pre-kids, Marty. Anyway. So this movie we mentioned before, Spielberg hired Tobe Hooper. He is known for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and 1 and 2, maybe some other stuff later. I don't know. This is nothing like that at all,
no.
Except for the face ripping.
God.
You know? The face ripping.
I mean, it's got money behind it, too, which really, really helped.
Yeah. And I liked the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but it's a very different tone.
Oh, so much.
Than this. So it's an interesting pick, right? And if you were going to say, well, guess who made this movie? If you had no idea and you just watched this movie, you just guess Spielberg. Like that Absolutely. Would be your guess, because that's what it feels like. Tobe Hooper doesn't have his fingers in this much, I don't think.
No.
You know, which is
I think he does. I think you're okay. So Tobe Hooper, I think probably looked. This is one of his first big chances to really do a big budget film. You know, Spielberg is not new to this. I think Tobe was, you know, being mentored a bit by Spielberg, and I think he's still here. I just don't think he wanted to overstep. You know, this is his first.
I can't square it. Why does this have an alternative director? Well, because Spielberg is in Tunisia filming Raiders of the Lost Ark. Hmm. Well, then Spielberg doesn't have
actually
the you know, access to guide the film, right?
What Spielberg actually has is another movie coming out the same year called E.T. And they don't want this confusion going on. So they make him agree to not take director's credit or to do too much directing in Poltergeist.
Yeah, but he went there every day, and it was only 20 minutes away from the E.T. shoot. So he was in there all the time. So here's my take. Spielberg has always had two movies come out when like in the same year, and it's always weird. Like Jurassic Park and Schindler's List, same year.
Right.
Saving Private Ryan, same year as, I forget what it was. It was something hilariously what was it? Crap. But he does this all the time where, you know, freaking Hook will come out, but also this really serious movie from Spielberg come out that year.
Right.
So he's always like spreading himself in that way. This seems like an early example of that, but this had this weird Tobe Hooper at the helm kind of deal.
Yeah. I think everybody recognized that Tobe Hooper was a very responsible director and could get things done, and I think, you know, having Spielberg back him up, I think that made a big difference.
He hasn't done much well, he's done lots of things, but none of it is anything we've seen.
Like Billy Idol Dancing with Myself, the video, come on.
Did he really do that?
Yeah, and Life Force.
Really?
We saw that your own film sec, did we not?
Oh, we did do
vampires,
Life Force.
The sucking vampires. Thanks. Energy vampires.
Yeah. With Picard was in that, if I recall, right?
Correct.
Invaders from Mars.
David Texas Warner was, two. Yeah.
Freddy's Nightmares, which was a TV show.
Series, remember that? Yeah,
Tales from the Crypt. So he did a lot of one-off TV stuff, including right up till, let's see, Masters of Horror.
I guess did you guys ever see The Mangler, Stephen King's book?
No.
About that? Oh, yes. Yeah, so I saw that.
How is it? Is it any good or dumb?
Oh, it was trash. Oh, but I enjoyed it.
Let's see.
It was good trash.
Oh, 4.3 out of 10 on IMDb. Oh, well,
right. A laundry folding machine has been possessed by a demon, causing it to develop homicidal tendencies.
Whoa. This has starred Robert England.
I really appreciate anybody who goes to the effort to say homicidal.
Yeah, homicidal. That had Freddy Krueger in it.
Starring Robert England.
Yeah.
Homicide. Yeah. Life on the street.
Homicide. Oh, it also had Ted Levine, who was in... Oh, what did he do? I thought he was director.
Okay, well, never mind.
Yeah, he's good. He's in like Silence of the Lambs.
He's the land, and he sticks his throat between his. Oh, you know what I'm talking about. He was in the Wild Wild West. He wasn't the chick in the bucket.
He was Heat, or he's in Heat.
McGrath.
He's in Heat. He's currently in Heat. Mm-hmm. He's trying to get mated.
He's currently in Heat. Very moody, and his fur is falling.
That all sounds right. All right, what else we got here? There's a couple. I like this one. I always like these. Craig T. Nelson and Joe Beth Williams are only 10 years older than the girl that played their daughter. I think that's funny.
The girl that is the star of the cringiest scene in the movie by far. I wish it had been cut. I will never forget.
This cat calling?
Yeah.
Yes, she gets home from school on her bike. I would say 14, but I could go 13 to 15.
Yeah.
Is her age, yeah?
That's what she's playing. She's 25.
Yeah, the age she's playing.
Yeah, she's 25 years old in real life.
They said their daughters were 5 and I think they said 16. She was 16.
16,
in the movie.
I thought. Yeah, because she's got friends who are driving, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But either way, creepy as shit. I hate those guys. So one of them's feeling so saucy that he's like, all right, first I'm going to whistle and say ratty things to your daughter, and then I'm going to lean into your window and eat your food.
Oh, my God.
Bluto. That's Bluto. Yes.
But, like, to really put a point on it, he says to her, his come on to her is, I love you, which is just so creepy. And not, like, in a horror movie way. It's just bad.
Wait, right. You guys say Bluto. Well, who are we talking about? Who's that guy?
This character, the character name is Bluto. The guy who leans in the window and does
that. Yeah, Bluto.
Oh, okay.
He drops the blinds on him. But I do kind of like that the mom doesn't go out and yell at the guys for catcalling. She sees that her daughter is handling things by doing a great Italian flip off deal and then doing the actual finger.
Yeah. I used to love doing that. No one does that anymore.
Good bird.
Yeah. What happened to that thing? Why did it lose? Speaking of the 80s, why did that lose its flavor? Because for a long time, you going like that was the thing, and now no one does it.
Feel bad. I don't know.
Scott just smacked his bicep, didn't he?
Oh, I did.
Yeah, he totally did. I heard it.
Yep.
Heard them guns.
Yep. Look at that. You hear that? And then I can bird at the same time like she did. We know what's up.
You're saying, look at that on an audio podcast.
Oh, I got it.
Just imagine it. Okay. Use your imagination. When there was something about that I liked. The mom's like, yeah, that's right. I taught her well. She knows how to.
I had to pause the movie and go do a palate cleanser after that scene. Yeah. I was so freaking mad.
What did you palate cleanse? How'd you do it?
What'd you palate with? Yeah. What'd you cleanse it with? Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I got a glass of water and a glass of port. I drank some fortified wine and a big glass of water.
Wow.
The thing is, I want to believe that we're just looking back at 1982. Like, things were different. And this was something that people would accept as commonplace. Mm-hmm. It just bugs me. Really? They really did? Our parents' generation?
But Wade, the 80s were great.
No, you're right. Some of those mores were, you know, they were troublesome. And I don't think a lot of that stuff, I think some of that stuff's still a problem. If you want my honest opinion. I just think that this movie, I think, was trying to make a statement that yes, this happens. I'm not sure they needed it, okay, ultimately, but I think the idea here is that this happens, and also she's a tough girl. She's gonna fight back.
Right.
And there's something about that to be admired. The only problem is it doesn't really pay off, because you're setting her up to be this really scrappy kid that's not just fighting with her siblings, but maybe she's more than that. And then she disappears for half the movie and doesn't come home until all the lights are screwed up and you gotta get in the car.
She's the typical big sister in the 80s, because that's what always happened. If you were a big sister or a big brother during like the late 70s and 80s, you always were there for a minute and then you just disappeared. And then, you know, you might come back. I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah, there's some of that. But I think there was a missed opportunity there to just have more with her. But also her reaction when she got back and was screaming, what's going on? That was pretty good.
I love that scene.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I really felt everybody. There was a lot of yelling and maybe too much, but I felt everybody's intense moments there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, keep moving, Dad. Keep driving. Oh. I'm trying to drive.
That was like the kids are saying, drive away, leave my older sister, let's get out of here.
Yeah, that's true. There was a point where she just wasn't getting in. She was frozen by fright or whatever, and the kid's like, just go, Dad, just go.
Get her.
Nobody cares about their older sister. Come on,
you're still young, you can have more. Come on, let's go.
Yeah, it they pushed for R rating on this thing, and Spielberg pushed back and said no, this would be a thing with him until PG-13 became a thing. But so many of his films, either produced under the Amblin name or his own directed stuff, would push that rating. Like Indiana Jones Temple of Doom was a big one. 84 is where it all came to a thing. But Gremlins is another example. Like, these were the movies that
Spielberg was like, you know what, face gore, not rated R, just deal with it.
Yeah,
we're gonna do some melting faces, we're gonna peel some faces off, but that's not R.
No,
get out of here.
No.
God, I remember that looking so much better in the 80s than it did this time.
You mean the face, the peeling off face?
The plastic, the rubber stuff didn't put
it. Yeah, I think it's because I was so scared by it that I never actually stared right at it. But now that I'm just looking at it, adult and desensitized, it looked pretty bad.
By the way, if Marty hadn't quit, I would have fired Marty saying, oh, I'm just going to go fix myself something.
Yeah.
Goes into my fridge, gets a steak.
A nice steak?
Big, juicy
son
steak.
Son of a bitch. Yeah. Like, all right, eat the chicken. That's totally fine. The chicken, you know, it's out there.
That's everybody's.
You're right, Brian. The 80s were terrible. The 80s were terrible.
They were terrible. They were terrible for this guy.
Hey, you just spoke. You spoke of this. Here, where is it? Right here. It wasn't the steak. It wasn't his face. It was the maggots on an actual piece of chicken.
Yeah, chicken maggots.
I can't deal with that, dude. Like, the idea that you were just—I mean, they did this in what's the Kiefer Sutherland vampire thing we watched? Lost Boys.
Right, Lost Boys.
How do you like those maggots, Michael?
Yeah, what you think you're eating is normal, and then you look down and it's not. Those always get me.
Anybody who's ever accidentally eaten into a bug in an apple will know this feeling.
Yeah, that's why I think what it plays to that fear of, like, you bit into that clam chowder you had a worm in it, and you just didn't know it. I don't know why I chose clam chowder.
I don't know.
Wow, weird. Well, you get your clam chowder.
You know why? I've got seafood soup I'm having for lunch later, and I don't need that.
Yeah, scallops are actually chopped up worms.
Here's my problem with clam chowder. Whenever I've had it somewhere where they say it's legitimately like authentic, it's always got sand in it on purpose. What is that about?
Purpose.
That's happened twice to me.
Sand?
It happened to me in Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. I went to a place that was supposed to be renowned for their clam chowder.
Oh no, I get that part, but why? What makes you think they're putting sand in it on purpose?
No. There's just, they don't take the sand out. They just let the stay.
Okay.
So when you eat it, the sand that was in or around those clams is part of the soup.
You know, you can wash these.
And everyone around me is going, oh, this is what you want. This is how you know you're getting real clam chowder. I'm like, no, this is how I know I want to die. This is horrendous. Right. I can't do it. I paid like
nothing. We didn't. That's some real potato there. We didn't peel off the dirt.
I paid $14 or something for that bowl, and I didn't eat it because it was so gross.
Gross.
Right. Anyway.
It's cooked sand, so it's
oh, jeez. Actually, isn't all sand cooked sand technically, right?
At one point, I guess, but
because it all started from volcanic stuff.
Yeah, so but I mean, once it's sitting on the beach, I consider that.
Right.
That's raw sand.
Don't be lawyer balling my clam chowder here now. Get out of here.
I just cannot eat clam chowder without that
premium saltine cracker. That's what I knew.
Now the cracker or the thing. Or the little
I don't want those little chips.
Not the little oyster crackers. Oyster crackers. I want it out of a bread bowl. I want it out of a sourdough bowl.
Ooh, now that's nice. You reckon Zelda Rubenstein, you think she still wants the clam chowder there?
Dude, we got a Rubenstein in this movie. Yeah.
Way to bring it back, Brian. Well done. Zelda Rubenstein, who, by the way, says that she said in interviews later, I guess. You know what? Scrutiny on this one.
Scrutiny.
Says that she didn't like Toby Hooper because she could tell he had a drug problem.
Yes, I've heard this from interviews with her before. And so she really doesn't like the Toby.
Yeah, but was she using like extra brain power witch shit to find out if he did drugs or
absolutely.
What? Okay.
I believe she has it.
All right.
I believe she's got something.
All right.
I actually liked her in part 3 as well. Did you guys ever see Poltergeist 3?
No.
I like 3 better than
she came back.
Yeah, I don't want her in part 3 because like at that point she should be, I don't know, talking to Congress or something.
Well, is she in 2?
Plus she kind of sucks because she thought she cleaned the house and there's still like
this
half house an hour of movie at the end,
right. Sort of clean.
She died 10 years ago at the age of 76. Let's see. So Poltergeist, she wasn't in 2?
No.
She absolutely was in 2. We talked about her when we saw her.
Hold on. I'm going to look because it says here she's not. And I thought she was 2.
Right.
She was.
Teen Witch.
Okay.
Nope. She was in Poltergeist 2, The Other Side.
Yeah, but we did see her in Teen Witch, though.
Wasn't she in Waxworks, or am I thinking that's all wrong?
you're thinking of the little midget guy. Yeah.
The little guy, the lady.
That little sounds just like her, but like the male version of her. Yeah. Welcome to the Waxworks.
And we also talked about her in 16 Candles. You're right. I remember. Zelda Rubinstein is just so freaking memorable and hard to use, right? Like you gotta kind of wedge her into a very select kind of movie, you know?
She's a legend. Totally.
Which one you said there, Ibbit?
Wasn't she in Teen Witch?
Yeah, the
Teen
one. Witch. Yeah, she was in Teen Witch.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking
crystal
of.
Crystal ball and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay, here's
By the way, I snuck by a Legend of Zelda reference right there.
Yeah, well done. I saw it, felt it, and then watched it as it left.
Like a rat against my leg in Sacktober. It was.
Dunaway, this is what you were thinking of right here. Hold on. Oh, wait, you can't hear it. Let me play it here. Check it out. That's who you're thinking of, is a little guy from Waxworks.
She's also that great reminder that we all love that you can do it, and no matter what age you are, you can go chase your dreams. She started acting at age 45.
Wow!
And appeared.
Oh my God!
I love people stories like that when they start late. Yeah. It's like
she originally auditioned for one of the people in the graves. Yeah,
yeah, that was
old she is.
You know what? We're gonna give her a speaking role. Take her out of the pool. I think you're on drugs, she said as soon as she came out.
Hire that woman.
Yeah, hire that woman right away. All right.
Yeah. Walk towards the light. Walk away from the light. Run away. No, run towards the light. Run away from the light.
Now, do you think they would have had to? So if this was today, okay, post MCU, a movie like this would have to pay Marvel Disney to use that Hulk on the horse, right?
Oh, yeah.
All the money they owe to Disney for the Star Wars stuff, the Marvel stuff.
That's true. Yeah. That's right.
I had that Darth Vader carrying case for all my
everybody. Had that right,
let's face it. If it was made nowadays, this would be a Disney movie. It would be somewhere under that huge umbrella, right?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know who owns the rights to it now, but like,
I mean, it was made 5 years ago, and
I don't know which
studio was made.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because it's remade. Yeah.
So, but you got to understand too. This is like best friends. Me and George are best friends. Time for Steven Spielberg. So
yeah,
him putting Star Wars stuff all over this, all over ET, like that. That all makes sense.
Really, just like an hour and a half advertisement for Star Wars. It's
kind of
yeah.
And the Hulk and his horse.
Do you see that in modern films? Do they really try to make it? I think we've talked about this before, but they really try to make modern films like kids' rooms have modern things. I mean, because this movie, this kids had like Rubik's cubes in there. They had Star Wars. Everything that people were actually. Those kids were playing with that time.
I don't think you're going to see a movie today with a bunch of Warhammer 40K figurines unless Warhammer 40K, right. Unless you're paying them a license fee.
Yeah.
That's all changed. Like the licensing of stuff has kind of ruined things a little.
It's going to always be stuff that kind of looks like the thing you think it is, but really isn't when you look like it's a Schmorhammer.
Yeah.
40K figure.
Now, having it in dialogue seems different. Like, I noticed in the season of The Boys, which I just finished, there is a ton of popular culture references, internet references, things that are, you know, Google gets mentioned, Twitter gets mentioned, like that kind of stuff in dialogue. I think you see a lot of that. But when you see actual objects of interest, like a Rubik's Cube of its time, whatever that would be today, a Pokemon or something, I don't know. I think you're paying through the nose if you want to use any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
I don't know how much Fresca charged the boys for all the references there.
Fresca, dude. That
and Billy Joel.
By the time that ends, I don't want anything to do with Fresca anymore after that. Because it goes.
Of, I must not have gotten there yet because I'm still wanting a Fresca.
You don't want it. Trust me. I mean, you won't eventually. You'll get there. Anyway.
Speaking of studios.
Oh, yeah.
So did we ever talk about E-Buzz in this? Did we talk about the dog? Did we decide what E-Buzz was, what exactly that meant?
E-Buzz?
The dog in Poltergeist.
There's a dog named E-Buzz?
Yeah, what is his name?
Hold on. I can't find
it. There's something weird. That's what we talked about in the second one.
E-Buzz? I can't find
E-Buzz?
It.
E-Buzz?
Is it E-Buzz?
I don't remember them saying that.
Well, sure, what was the dog's name? What was the dog? It was something weird.
E.B.U.Z.Z. is the name of the dog in this movie.
That's
right.
Really? E-Buzz? With a dot?
Yeah. Like Edward Buzz or something.
Right.
And he's on a list of favorite movie dogs.
Like E period, but like his first name is something and they shorten it to E.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was like, I had my head stuck on like it was a URL. E.Buzz?
Pulling /4/
How much they pay to register that on GoDaddy? Gotcha. Yeah. E-Buzz.
I would like to read this to you. It's a blog post from just last year. As any horror fan knows, the family dog is usually the first victim of any violence. They help alert the humans that something is weird going on. Poltergeist pooch E-Buzz is actually the first member of the Freeling family that we meet. The film opens with the TV turning to static and the dog goes around, right? He eats the chips. Boy, it was fun to see old snack foods.
I really
enjoyed that in this movie.
The camera, weird bag of Cheetos,
The camera follows the dog up the stairs. He goes to every room in the house. It's crazy, guys. This dog does so much acting to start this movie.
Well, he's introducing all the characters.
I like a dog. I like a movie dog. I'll just say it.
The trope is that they're either the first one to die or they're the one that you have to go back in the house to get because the family's out, they're safe. We finally got away from this thing. Oh no, we left the dog in there.
And I finally got to the answer. The dog's odd name comes from a Saturday Night Live skit in which Dan Aykroyd portrayed a art critic named E. Buzz Miller.
Oh, wow.
Huh. There we go.
Okay. Hmm. They went places with that then.
And then
by the way, you can get it
just in 1941.
You can get a dot buzz username or URL if you want.
That's an official TLD?
Yep, you can get there now. So I went and found. I want to do one like, I don't know. What would you do?
Woody dot buzz.
That's good. I mean, Lightyear dot buzz. No, I don't know what you'd do, but there's something there. I kind of like these new domains that we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think it was really stupid because nobody wanted anything but .com, but you know what? We're running out of them. They're getting low on the old .coms, or they're getting too long. So let's try something new. All right. I got a trope here for Steven Spielberg. If he's listening, they did that thing like in Jaws where the camera's like sliding in, but it's going backwards. You know what I mean? Like that hallway got long, but big.
Oh,
at the same
time. Yeah. The vertigo. Yeah.
What's that
vertigo
called?
Vertigo, Scott.
It's got a name.
It's the Vertigo shot. Isn't it
the Vertigo? Vertigo Zoom, I think, is what they call
it. The name of it? All right. It's something like that. Some listener will correct us, but there's some name for that thing. I forget what it is.
Dolly Zoom?
Also, if my mom was that clumsy around an empty pool, I don't know if I could see my mom anymore. I think I'd be done with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. You see it breaking on the side there. I think I guess it's the second time that she falls in and slides down the muddy slope. Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah. You seem to be like, oh no, I'm going further. Oh no, I'm doing it again.
The first time is forgivable. The second time is.
Yeah, it just got a little out there after a while. All right. Clips. I'm going to do clips now. Yeah. Clips? All right.
Mm-hmm. Let's do these. Some clips.
I like this movie a lot. My final note, by the way, my main notes was holds the hell up. And I think it, I really do think it does.
No, the only note we didn't get to on mine is, why is the Atari 2600 in the parents' bedroom?
Yeah, what the frick? Whatever. My PlayStation's down
that's
here.
That's hoarding, and that's not being good to your kids.
Right. That kid needs, the scared of the tree kid needs
some
fun.
The kids didn't have a TV in their room, right?
No, but there was a TV in the living room with these big, massive speakers on either side of it. Why not play your Yar's Revenge down there as a family?
I love the speakers.
And I love that you chose Yar's Revenge. Truly the only great game that ever came out.
The only Atari game that matters.
We didn't talk about flushing a bird in the toilet. That's a terrible idea. Wow. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, don't put a bird in the toilet. Bury that thing.
Also, goldfish go in the toilet. Birds go in the...
Yeah. And here's my note.
In your marijuana box.
I'd actually like a tripler for this.
Okay. Sorry, I'm laughing at marijuana box.
This may have been a blur with last week's movie because there was also a burial in the backyard. But if you're going to put something in a box and bury it, you don't put it right in... like the flower bed.
Oh.
Or the pool zone or wherever. Like, that's just where not
Buzz is like ready to go.
That's not how this works. And little pets die all the time. You got to do something with them. I've currently got a fish that has been, that has narcolepsy. I have a fish with narcolepsy.
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. You have a fish with narcolepsy.
Does he go upside down and goes to the top of the, because you're out.
I am
just sleeping. Yeah.
I need to know more about this.
I'll tell you
fish.
What I'm not going to do. Yeah. I'm not going to put it in like a flower pot.
Well, hold on. Does this fish like go bleep, turn upside down and then everyone thinks it died? Is that what happens?
Wow. We just had the biggest lag of all time.
Oh, weird.
Cool.
Yeah. It switched to US and without me doing it. Something might be up with Discord today.
Answer our question, Randy.
Yeah, but hold on.
Answer the question.
But wait, this fish.
What's up with your sleepy fish?
So
what is going
fish,
on?
This fish of yours, it turns upside down and floats like a dead fish and then wakes up?
It sleeps all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, only a fish can sleep. It's perfectly still and it ends up getting attached to the intake of the filter because it's like that and it looks dead. Like, that looks like a dead fish body. But then you go tap on the glass, and it's like, oh, I'm here, and it just swims around.
I don't know why that's so funny to me.
I'm doing my job. Awesome. I'm swimming.
Yeah, it's a big black goldfish named Winston.
Somebody call Pixar. We got a movie idea we could do.
And so, like, for months and months, I've been expecting Winston to die any day now. Like, it's just, this fish is not living 24 hours a day. It's living intermittently. Yeah. And I'm like, what am I going to do with it? Mm. And movies like this one are no help. Zero help. Yeah. No.
None.
I'm not going to do what they say.
Well, how close is Will to the fish? Would he have all kinds of emotion if the fish passed and that sort of thing? Or
My general plan is to make a little coffin for it and go find a place to bury it nearby, which sucks because it doesn't matter where we put that in our neighborhood. Like, our neighborhood is overrun with coyotes and strays and so on. So, like, that sucks. But I just don't know what to do. What are you supposed to do?
Just cook him and eat him. Cook him and eat him.
Go full Steve-O and just hork him down. Just right in front of the kid.
You're going to have, like, that tryptophan where you're going to start.
Right, just swallow him and go, see, now he's part of me and you when we're all his circle of life and you can just sing a little song and it's all good.
Yeah, just hork it down right in front of Will. Check it out, son. There he goes. He's in a far better place.
Ooh, sandy.
All right, clips for real now. These are clips that I'm going to play from this film, Poltergeist. And it starts with this one, which is, I don't think that you'd say it this way. That's my commentary on the following clip.
You know, once I slept, walked four blocks.
Slept, walked? Isn't that sleep?
Yeah, slept, walked. That's right.
That was a great story.
She put the T. Slept, walked.
Slept, walked.
That's not right.
Slept, a walking.
There's no way that's right. Right?
If it's in the past, I slept, walked.
Did you say I sleepwalked? Yeah.
I would say, are you sleepwalking again? Did you sleepwalk? Did you?
I once walked in my sleep.
Present tense is easy, but. Yeah, I guess you'd have to break it up. I slept.
I just love that story so much, and I love that it really looked like Craig T. Nelson had never heard the story before and was reacting the first time.
They were great. They were great. You could tell me those two got married.
Sweet couple.
You guys, you could tell me those two got married and were one of the great Hollywood couples ever, and I believe you because they just seemed so genuine together. They were great.
Yeah.
Oh, you asked earlier, Randy, what other things I remember from this movie, what story besides the maggots and the guy in the bathroom? The other one is Mary Beth Joe Williams Jr. having her panties shown a lot. That's my other memory.
Now, so, which is really funny because at the beginning of that scene where they do an amazing Gravity House effect, I freaking love that. That is one of the all-time greatest special
that
effects.
That and Dancing on the Ceiling by Lionel Richie.
They're exactly the same.
Yeah.
Same but house. At the beginning of that, she's sitting on the bed. She's wearing a long shirt. And she goes to move higher on the bed. And she scoots on her back in a way that keeps the shirt covering. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, mm-hmm. who are you doing this for? Mm-hmm. There's no one around. Mm-hmm. Any human being would just crawl up the bed.
She did it for the ratings board is what she did it for.
Right, exactly. And that took me out of the movie because we then immediately start seeing her panty, you know?
Yep.
I don't want the poltergeist to see my no-no.
Well, and they've already boxed up most of their stuff in the moving truck. Why is she getting ready to...
Obviously not. Do you see that? It's like, oh, we got it all out here in the yard in the moving truck. Go inside. And it's like, did y'all pack anything?
Yeah, no kidding.
Exactly. These are the boxes we never unpacked that we left in the garage. Yeah.
That was weird. It made me remember how much I hate moving. But anyway, I hate it. All right, here's two things you never want in the same sentence.
Bruises and hickeys.
Bruises and hickeys.
Yummy.
Bruises and hickeys.
The context there is that her dad comes to the police station, right?
Yeah.
And is searching her body. That's a little creepy.
It is a little weird.
Right. Can I just thank you, by the way, for not making that a prom clip?
Oh, yeah.
I was wondering.
I thought about it.
Don't worry. It's coming around, though, because there was definitely a Brian in this.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm assuming.
Yeah, there was a thing. You may not be the one you expect, but I got something. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Here's some duck time with Coach in bed.
Oh, no.
Okay, you too. Jeez Louise.
Sexy duck time.
Yeah.
Let's go.
So this is... I wrote Brian's. I'm not sure my description's right. I wrote Brian's penis when he was young. I don't know what this is.
Nice.
So I'm going to play it and let's see what it was.
Looks at me. It knows I live here.
Oh my gosh. All right. It looks at me. It knows I live here. All right. Now I know what I was trying to do. All right. The famous line.
They're here.
There's that. Here's a fun one.
You're a big barf bag.
You're a barf bag.
Yeah, last week there was some
fun
insults.
I heard you're a big birthday, and I think that's really funny.
You're a big birthday?
You're a big birthday.
Happy birthday!
Yeah. Here's Caroline watching. Oh, she's watching a Western, and we get a
Wilhelm. I heard it.
Spielberg can't have.
I'm wondering if
without.
He's watching or she's watching the movie that the Wilhelm scream originally came from. I wanted to look in trivia and see if that was the case because that was
a great Western trivia. Right? Wasn't it a Western?
Yeah, there was another film they were watching, also black and white. And the actor was discussing whether he was dead or not, and he was told he was. Mm. And I meant to go back and look and see what that movie was.
I don't know what that was. From. Okay, it says here the original stock sound. It was 1951 with a film called Distant Drums. And was it a Western?
It's a guy hopping over a creek.
Yeah, but it is a Western. So I think that may have been, I mean, that would have been the way to do it, right? Say, put your original in there. That would be cool.
Yeah, if you wanted to do it, that'd be the way to do
that'd
it.
Be,
unless it was the Charge of Feather River, which is where it got named after Private Wilhelm. Like it was used in a couple movies before it got attached.
Movies.
All of a sudden, I'm Maria Menounos.
I don't go to that.
Welcome to Waxworks.
Yeah, welcome to
Waxworks. Anyway, the Charge of Feather River is a 1950 Western that has a character named Private Wilhelm who makes that sound when he gets shot in the thigh, but it's the recorded one from
and he really got shot in the thigh, right?
Yeah,
that's what happens.
It's all real. You thought you was fake is real. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's Caroline saying all right, that's just fun to hear.
Carol Ann, isn't it? Not Caroline.
Carol Ann, you're right. Say Carol Two
Ann.
Words.
I thought I said Carol Ann.
Yeah.
Didn't I? I wrote Carol Ann. Did I say Carol Ann?
Carol Ann.
Carol Ann is what I thought you said.
I have
whatever
a,
movies.
Doesn't matter, movies.
I have a cousin named Caroline, and I mix those up all the time with Caroline.
Caroline,
yeah,
really?
Caroline, yeah. She's no, I won't get into this. she's there in Denver though, so
it
watch
sounds
out.
I was gonna say it sounds southern, like Caroline.
It does a little, but she's born here and then moved to Denver in her teens and lives there now and is kind of a psycho. Anyway.
You mean her tines?
Her tines. Sorry, her tines. don't ask her how to say Frankenstein. She'll really screw that one up. All right, here's this is how you know when your grandma farted. Okay, so here's that.
I can smell her.
Okay. also, well, whatever. I
can smell them.
I can smell them. There's another one I thought of. All right, here's just a weird sound.
Wow.
Okay, it's just him getting excited. What was that from? A kid was shocked.
It's the boy standing in front of the TV because I thought it was the weirdest delivery of that, but it was right after the scene where Caroline, damn it, moves through her mom's body, and the kid Robbie's just sitting there in front of the TV going, "Wow!"
Oh,
like
yeah.
You're the worst delivery of the line "Wow" ever.
Wow!
Yeah.
All right, here's some ASMR 1982 style. Enjoy.
There's been some ionization flux. I'd like to make sure they're not caused by humidity coming from structure leakage, but I'm not going up there to find out.
I am all for people.
But I'm not going up there to find out.
People that like the ASMR whisper stuff, no problem with them or them liking it. I can't do it. It drives me crazy.
Always sounds too like there's way too much liquid in their mouth.
Yeah, like something's coming together. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That's according.
Again, like I say, to each their own, but I can't do it. There's whole channels developed or devoted to this on YouTube and all over Twitch, and I can make it 10 seconds into one of these streams and I have to leave. I can't do it. All right. We heard this earlier.
You don't mind hanging back? You're jamming my frequencies.
You're jamming my frequencies.
Yeah, if that wasn't a you know, something that you could put in a rap song, I don't know what it is. I mean, no kidding. If you couldn't like just clip that and put it in there.
Well, this is what it sounds like when you keep a Zelda in your garage.
With her, you'll never see her again.
Carol Ann, I want you to answer me.
She sounds so muffled. Some of the sound work, not great. It's okay, but not great.
That's because you ever try to get a boom mic on somebody 4 foot tall? I mean, it's going to come up from the...
It's going to show up on screen because right. It's got to be so much lower than everybody else.
So here's a quote my wife never said when my kids were all at home. She never said this once.
This house is clean.
Never happened. Never clean. Okay, this is my kind of angry acting. Really enjoyed this. I'm going to give it the best of 2020 at the very least, maybe of all films.
Oh.
Son of a bitch, you moved the cemetery, but you left the bodies, didn't you? You left the bodies and you only moved the headstones! You only moved the headstones! Why?
Why? That's so good.
Best.
It's so good.
Of all time.
Yeah. The best part is the...
I know. The end. When you think it can't get any more rigorous at the end there, it just goes off the trail. Mm-hmm. I love it. All right. One more of those. All right. And that's it for clips. Time for this. Time for the famous Film Sack Checklist. Should have let Spielberg do all the sequels and stuff? Check.
Uh-huh.
The pool is gross? Check. Those neighbors suck? Check.
Oh, they're the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. I don't get bothered by mosquitoes. They don't bother me at all, ever.
Soundtrack great. I give it a P for perfect for this. I think it's just right for this movie. The right kind of score. No synth. Good orchestra stuff. Jerry Goldsmith doing his thing. Strong deal. I liked it. And I actually think the kind of... I don't know, the way it started and ended with this like Pollyannish kind of music, right? Like we played earlier, wherever it is, this. Like, I actually think that benefits the movie by being there at the beginning, rip it out. Now it's all scary. Bring it back in after the TV gets kicked to the curb. That's great. And also, if you ask the guy about the ring, whoever made the ring, do you think he'd admit that his inspiration for like TV ghost came from this? Gotta be, right?
Probably. Maybe. It must be.
Gotta be.
Are you talking about Ringu?
No, Ring. The Ring.
That's what
the
I ring. Said. Ringu?
Yeah, it came from Japan as Ringu first.
Oh, I never saw the Japan one. Actually, what, I don't even think I've seen the other one in full, but I just know about it.
What I want to know is, did Last Action Hero, when they have the very, very well-trained dogs that all jump into a pyramid on each other, was that inspired by the rapidly stacked chairs pyramid?
So many ideas taken from this film. Weird. Yeah. All right, let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's begin with Randy.
Poltergeist, a movie that demonstrates once and forever there are 3 tons of glitter in the average bedroom. Is it just like Ibbitt's house? I don't even know how that works.
Lots, just like Ibbitt's house. That doesn't have to be a Saturday night even.
A lot of glitter.
Anytime.
No, any day. Any day of the week.
Once you get into glitter, you're in it for life. There's no getting away.
You're never getting rid of it.
Nope. That's how you know when they do paint bombs, like when a robber opens a bag of cash he stole and explodes the paint on him? I think they should explode with glitter. That's how.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever see that guy who made an Apple HomePod box?
That was Mark Rober. Yeah.
Mark Rober. Yeah. Okay. That is Mark Rober. Yeah. And it's great. Like, basically, and it's got webcams in it, so you can see this guy opening it up, and this thing explodes with glitter and farts in his car as he's stealing
it. Oh, right. And fart spray and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember. Yeah. I didn't realize that was that same guy Randy was talking about. That's great. Well done, that guy. He should do more. Does he? He probably does.
Yes. He probably has
a whole YouTube channel.
Yeah.
For one of the most successful YouTubers of all time.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it went all viral from this thing with that, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, the glitter fart. Yeah.
Film Sack's day is coming, I'm telling you. One of these days we're going to go viral. All right. That's it for that. Now, Brian, wait, who have we not done? Brian Dunaway, I guess.
Oh, Poltergeist. We don't go into that room anymore. It has a clown.
Oh, by the way,
that's the only reason.
Good news, Ibbitt. That clown is on display at the Planet Hollywood in Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas.
I don't know how I've never seen it. Well, is there still a Planet Hollywood at Caesar's Palace in Vegas?
Actually, that's a good point. Maybe not.
There hasn't been in the last,
because they had the Vegas. Planet Hollywood casino across the street, and now that's back to being the Aladdin.
Really?
Or I mean, that was the Aladdin for a while, and now it's. It was Aladdin and then Planet Hollywood. No, it still is the Planet Hollywood, but it's not at Caesar's.
Looks like it. It looks like
I like it when Ibbitt argues with himself.
It's been too long since I've been to Vegas.
Yeah. I want you to start. Oh, that's the bottom line here is we all need to go.
It really
to Vegas.
Is. Yeah.
So the answer appears to be yes. It is still in the shops, the forum shops, and they're even open today, apparently. Wow.
All right.
So, maybe you just cruise in there and you can see the doll.
Yeah. Wings and a look at the doll. Sounds like a typical trip to Vegas. All right. Brian Ibbitt, you're the last one.
Poltergeist. Ancient tribal burial ground, huh?
Nice.
They didn't say tribal.
They did. That's a direct line from the, except for the hod that I added.
Right.
Did they add tribal? I thought they didn't do tribal.
They said ancient tribal burial ground.
They did. So it is
in the movie.
They just expanded.
I know,
because
that surprised me, because they didn't mention Native Americans at all. Otherwise, it was just a cemetery. Hmm.
But they dove in on that on the sequel. So I'm confused. That's weird. It sounded like a movie that didn't know if it wanted to do that or not, and they just never really decided.
Exactly.
All right. Well done, everybody. But it's important we do this now. I was handed this list of drop something on my finger.
Paper cut.
Good.
Whoa.
handed that list slowly next time.
I was handed this list at 300 meters per second.
Gave me a paper cut and put lemon juice on it. All right. These were almost the titles. This one was almost called There's an Anus in My Room, but they didn't go with that. Or, well, there's a problem with your TV. Well, there's the problem with your TV, ma'am. Moving on. Let's get this email out of the way from Gregory Kramer. Not that we need to get it out of the way. It's a great email. It's filmsack@gmail.com is the email address. And I'm killing it here. Let's see. Gregory Kramer.
I'm telling you, I kind of want to let everybody in the listening audience know that we recorded 2 on one day. And we're at the very end of part 2.
Yeah, it's a long slog.
We're all exhausted.
Haul.
We're not made for this.
No, we're tired. Old men. But anyway, he says, hey, Scott, Brian, and Brian. He spelled all your names with the B-R-Y-A-N for some reason.
The worst spelling.
Yeah, I don't know why. But anyway, I've been listening to you guys since the old school instance days. You're my go-to for nerdy movie guy stuff.
Oh.
And the only people I know who can name actors in movies like I can. I'm always the dork pointing out actors. Not today, though. My names are terrible today. Anyway, been listening more and more ever since I got my new job and actually pay attention to the podcast as I'm working. Any chance you guys can do Gamer? It's a perfectly sackable movie with some big actors. Just listen to your Super Mario Brothers movie, by the way, including John Leguizamo, who's in that movie. I would love to hear your opinions on one of my favorite good, bad action movies of all time. Either way, I love what you guys do, and you guys keep my long days. Let's see. You keep me sane on my long days, and I look forward to many more of your material.
Yeah.
Hope you guys are
that's English.
Hope you guys are staying safe out there, and we'll listen as long as you're putting stuff out. Well, Greg, we will continue to do that. Is Gamers the one with the
first person VR?
Yeah, it's like the first person Gerard Butler.
No, that's Hardcore Henry, right?
No,
I think that's also one.
Hardcore Henry is the whole movie is first person. Gamer only part of the movie is first.
Right, kind of like Doom was, where they had like a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, a little bit to it. Yeah, yeah.
Here
yeah,
it is, 2009. Gerard Butler. Oh, same year as. That's crazy. That same year as 300. I would assume this was later. But anyway, here's the description. In a future mind-controlling game, Death Row convicts are forced to battle in a Doom-type environment. Convict Cable, controlled by Simon, a skilled teenage gamer, must survive 30 seconds in order to be set free. That sounds like our kind of bullshit. Let's do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember this coming out, but I didn't see it. Michael C. Hall's in it? That's cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I like that guy. He's all right.
Terry Crews is in there. That's cool. He can make his boobs move. That's cool. yeah, we'll do Gamer. Why not? Sure. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, but seems reasonable to put that on our list.
Up our alley.
Yeah. In fact, speaking of what's up our alley, we're making a hard turn from Halloween movies because this is the end of October. Happy Halloween,
everybody. Happy Halloween.
Our next film is Being John Malkovich, which I never saw. And I want to see it. So we're seeing it. Mm-hmm. Not just because I want to see it, but because this feels like one of those movies that just, I don't know.
It was always an important movie.
Yeah, it feels like everyone always talked about it. I never saw it. Don't know why. It's time. Let's do it. But that's a hard turn from Halloween movies.
Very much so.
Halloween movies.
I can't get words out today.
Hour four of Film Sack.
Well, on that note, that will be the end of today's episode. A reminder, just a friendly one, to go to filmsack.com if you're looking for our archive episodes all the way back to episode one, 11 years ago. You can go all the way back to Kroll if you want to. Just go to filmsack.com. It's all there. Most recent 200 episodes are on the current feed, so you don't need to worry about those if you're not worried about those. I said the same thing twice. All right. filmsack@gmail.com is that email address. Find us on Twitter @FilmSack and leave us reviews wherever you find your shows. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Andy.
They're here.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Bye! Jeez.